United States v. Goddar. Mr. Ayad.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Attorney Nabi Ayad. I represent Mr. Goddar. The defense judge is, the appellants are arguing that the district court judge Derryagin erred in applying the two-level sentencing enhancement and finding that appellant used sophisticated means in furtherance of this crime under USSG Section 2T1.4, subsections B, subsection 2. As Your Honors know, concealment is an inherent element of any crime involving fraud. In this case, that is clearly lacking in this particular circumstances. To qualify for a sophisticated means enhancement, the offense conduct must be especially complex or especially intricate. The usage of the word especially modifies the sophistication requirement. It does mean the deprived, quote, deprived of a native or original simplicity as highly complicated, many-sided, complex. This was stated in the United States v. Montano, 250 F. 3rd, 709, 9th Circuit, 201. According to Webster's Third New International Dictionary at 2174, 1993. Because the fraud is inherently covert, the benchmark question for the court is to decide is first, what does the average criminal tax fraud case look like? Therefore, the court will then have sufficient foundation to decide if appellant's conduct was indeed sophisticated. This will normally be done through surveying the legal landscape of comparable tax cases to set the benchmark for sophisticated means analysis. We have listed, as Your Honors know, numerous cases cited and gone over in our brief found at pages 14 through 16. What is clear is that all these cases where sophisticated means was found dealt with defendants that have used some sort of fictitious names, dummy corporations, false or straw men, bank accounts, false social security numbers, AKAs, and used fictitious senders or receivers for the money. None, and I say none, are existent in the appellant's defendant's case, Your Honors. The appellant did not create or use a shell or dummy corporation. Appellant did not create, use, or cause to be used any fictitious names. None of the subject funds have passed through false or straw man bank accounts. Appellant did not create, use, or cause to be used any false social security numbers.
He did use some offshore bank accounts, didn't he? Lebanese bank accounts?
That is correct.
And, he used some relatives? Didn't he transfer monies to relatives?
He transferred monies to his account overseas, Judge, because he was living there. He only lived in the United States literally 1 or 2 months a year in the last 4 years before.
He didn't transfer any money into any relatives' accounts or other people's accounts?
He may have transferred, again, this is an eight-year process that this was happening, Judge.
$60 million, isn't it?
No, he didn't transfer $60 million.
How much was the scam?
They were saying up to $7 million, $2.5 to $7 million we had basically to the sentencing plea agreement under. Yes.
Somewhere in that range.
Yeah, and he was found for $4.5 million, I believe.
Didn't he have others do some structuring, making deposits of amounts less than $10,000?
If I may answer your first question, Your Honor, the first one is that it was over an eight-year span. There might have been one or two times where he had sent money to, if he wasn't in the area, he would send it for someone to pick it up for him, basically a relative, again, but it was going into his bank account. Basically, the money was transferred to him. Not an American, because there's no banking institutions in the country of Lebanon.
It's very difficult for the Internal Revenue Service to track what goes into a Lebanese bank account, right?
Well, they sent it, though, from these accounts, his accounts here. They could clearly monitor that. Once it's sent from the tobacco house account and it was shipped over to him, it was gone again to his account. It wasn't to some John Doe or AKA's account or what have you, Your Honor. Okay, so I mean, he lived it. That's the only. How else would he get the money? There's three ways of getting the money. When he was here, he carried the money, or got cashier's checks, or when he was over there, he's asked family or the tobacco house, the accountant or the manager or employees to send him the money in their actual names. This is the only way they can get the money over to him. And it's very important for Your Honors to look to the fact that he did actually report tax returns. And 1 year, $170,000. Another year, $133,000, $120,000. So if he's reporting this income, basically, he's entitled to receive some money. Of course, he has to pay the taxes on, and that's what, you know, what he was in trouble over. And I would go on further to say he never used an AKA. He did not employ or make use of fictitious senders or receivers. No technology really was used to conceal the assets. Appellant has never created or used any false emails, letterhead, or other false documents in this particular case. This is not a case for this particular defendant. This is not a CSI situation or a 007 individual where he uses very complicated means to get the money over to him. In fact, Your Honors, I can't envision anything more simpler than basically what this defendant did in order to have the fraud, because we know there's some kind of covert or concealment involved in fraud for you basically to conduct the unlawful act. And here, just taking the money and separating the cash from the checks or what have you, obviously he's not going to take checks. He would need to separate them somehow to basically put them to get them over to him. The sister counsel, I know, is going to come up here and say that there's four issues basically that they complain about that would show for the basis for enhancement. The fact that he segregated the cash receipts from the originals, he paid suppliers in cash, paid employees in cash, and appellees transferred money to his own personal accounts overseas. As to, again, breaking cash receipts from other receipts and failed to deposit cash in bank is nothing more than your normal cash skimming operation, which in the court held in U.S. versus Conti, reason that a shopkeeper that simply emptied the cash receipts from a business and failed to report the cash income was unsophisticated. Second, the fact that appellant paid suppliers in cash is actually the normal course of business in retail tobacco industry, where high volume, high turnover is the norm. Suppliers want first to take all the cash that they can possibly take, because you're dealing in normal orders. Some of them could be $100,000, which you may already sell within a three-day period. They don't want to take a check. That's not normal in the industry to take a check. Then if a check bounces and you order another order, they're out $100,000. It's very common in that industry. And it's also very common in the industry where the warehouses are clearly monitored, basically are clearly overwatched and monitored as to see to be in compliance with complete records under the state regulations. The same goes for the employees that were paid in cash. There's nothing sophisticated about paying employees in cash, especially if they've earned that they've earned those funds. No, nothing has been indicated that they haven't.
What was the point of funneling the foreign transfers through relatives and friends' accounts, overseas accounts?
He never sent the he sent them basically to his accounts overseas.
I thought he funneled them through on some occasions through other accounts.
Yes, Your Honor, there has never been any funneling of any accounts. They would always send them over to his account. There might have been one or two times, again, over an eight-year period where he couldn't get to the thing. Someone was close to the bank. He'll tell him, send it to him so you can pick it up for me. So that was probably one or two occasions. There hasn't really been any excessive or basically any other types of transactions.
So there were only two occasions on which he directed deposits to be made in a relative's or friend's accounts overseas for ultimate transfer to his own account? That only happened twice?
It happened, I believe, just a few times. I don't know on top of my head, Your Honor, the exact number of times. But, again, we take into consideration that this is an eight-year period. And, again, it was for convenience-wise, not nothing for anything other than that. And again, if that was the case, he would have been doing it all the time and on there also. And plus, when the money was sent, it was sent through the tobacco house. So again, there's a trace actually where it went. So, and then given the fact that all prior transactions have been to there, it's common and understanding that it would be going to him overseas. And and it's important also to realize in 2005 that the defendant understood that the Department, Illinois Department of Revenue, was conducting an extensive audit of him, and this audit continued for years. And while that time, he continued to travel back and forth, and his arrest in Germany was only due to the fact that he didn't know about the charges. And, Your Honors, I'll ask that you also take into consideration that he spent 14 months in solitary confinement, really enough time to make anyone go mad. We actually had to bring suit against the Federal Bureau of Prisons to before they actually took him out of the solitary confinement. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Ayad. Mr. Hammerman? Oh, I'm sorry. Looked at the wrong thing. Ms. Stryker, sorry.
Yes. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Sarah Stryker on behalf of the United States. The District Court correctly applied the sophisticated means enhancements when calculating the guidelines for defendants' tax and mail fraud offenses. These offenses related to the defendant's failure to declare tens of millions of dollars in cash revenue earned at his tobacco house stores.
You know what's troublesome about these cases? So, because of the scale of the fraud, the $74 million, that obviously leads to a higher sentence.
Yes, Your Honor.
So then we don't want, presumably, do we look at sophistication relative to the lowest level of fraud that people commit, or should we ask, is this sophisticated relative to what you need to do to defraud the tax authorities of $74 million, right?
Yes, Your Honor. I think the guidelines instruct that the sophisticated means enhancement is appropriate when there have been steps, deliberate steps, to conceal the cash. So, of course, as...
But as Mr. Ayad said, fraud is always concealed. So...
That's correct, Your Honor. But here, it's not only the concealment, it's making the crime more difficult to detect. And the use of offshore accounts to do that is specifically noted in the guidelines as noting sophisticated means being used. And here, the defendant used several different methods.
But what if you had a type of fraud, very huge fraud, which could only be effectuated with offshore guidelines? Because it was a huge fraud, you get a large sentence anyway. And isn't the sophistication supposed to be, something that not all people in that guidelines bracket, that based on the size of the fraud, engage in?
Well, if I understand Your Honor's example, the use of offshore accounts is used in your example in the large fraud. And because of the use of offshore accounts, it makes the offense much more difficult to detect.
No, I understand that. But the point is, are there any cases of $74 million frauds when they don't use equally sophisticated means?
Well, Your Honor, the example given in Cotney is a person who does a cash skimming scheme. It could be large scale, and simply puts the cash earned in a shoebox under his bed. I believe that's the example the Seventh Circuit gave. And in that instance, there would not be sophisticated means. But, of course, that's far from what the defendant did here. He not only separated the cash receipts earned at his stores, but he funneled that cash overseas, as Your Honor has pointed out, sometimes through the use of third-party accounts, essentially washing the money through their accounts. And he also did it through the use of illegal structuring of deposits into his accounts. And so in this instance, the defendant clearly used sophisticated means over a long period of time to have millions of dollars of cash by sending it overseas, thereby making it difficult to detect.
Odd about it, though. I mean, the actual scale of the fraud is small. I mean, he conceals a lot of income, but it's only about $5 million altogether. So is that the base? His guideline range is not determined by the $74 million, is it, but by the $5 million?
That's correct. The loss amount to the Internal Revenue Service.
So it's really not that big a fraud.
In the amount of the loss amount, right. Yes, Your Honor.
It's a $5 million. So you're saying there are plenty of $5 million frauds that don't involve overseas accounts.
That's correct, Your Honor. Not only overseas accounts, but the various means in which he sent this money overseas. And defendants suggest that he was just using it to support himself in Lebanon. But as the court has probably seen from the record, there's also transfers of money to the English Channel Islands, where the defendant did not live, and also, again, the use of washing the money through the accounts of relatives to get that money to Lebanon.
Did that only happen a couple of times?
No, Your Honor. I believe the record indicates that occurred at least five times, and the total amount of money was approximately $220,000, which is quite a significant sum of money, and in fact, defendant admitted to that in the plea agreement.
So he had other individuals make sub $10,000 deposits into his account, and he wired it to a Channel Island account in larger amounts and then to Lebanon.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's actually separate from the use of the third party's accounts. You're exactly right. He directed his accountant to make structured deposits into his own accounts in the U.S. and thereafter send that money overseas. And at the sentencing hearing, the defendant admitted that he made those structured deposits to avoid the reporting requirements. So it shows the mindset of the defendant in attempting to, again, conceal this money from the authorities and to separate it from his tobacco house stores where it was earned.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. If there are no further questions from the court, I will ask that the court affirm the district court's application of the sophisticated means enhancement in this case. Thank you very much.
Ms. Stryker. So, Mr. Ayad, do you have anything further?
Referring to the English Channel, Judge, these were actually just a few transactions that happened literally within approximately of 1 month, February 7 of 2006 to March 30th of 2006, approximately a month and a half. I'm sorry. That's the only transaction. That if that was simply for, and again, they went from Tobacco House, from the account of the defendants, the business of the defendant, again, not hiding anything, over to the English Channel. That was for an investment to buy a used car dealership.
Wait a minute, though. They came in $9,000 chunks into cash deposits to his American
accounts. They came into the from the Tobacco House account, basically, over to his account.
And had been deposited in $9,000 amounts, right?
The one individual did, yes. And I believe that's
because of the $9,000 amount?
They have four different stores, Your Honor, at least at the time, I think five tobacco retail stores, and they would take the money, whatever is simply more convenient for them to do at that particular time. And
but
they would
structured
get
to be less than $10,000.
I would believe it's structured to be less than $10,000. That is correct, Judge. But again, it's to save on the paperwork and issues of that matter and to make it more convenient for them to get
saves,
that over there.
It saves one piece of paperwork that's very important.
Well, that is correct, Your Honor. And in addition,
you've emphasized just in your answer to Judge Tinder, but also in your argument and in your brief, that maybe all these gimmicks that your client used, maybe they were for entirely personal reasons, and he was not trying to conceal. We're trying to take extra measures of concealment. But I wonder if that matters, because one of the purposes, of maybe the purpose of the enhancement, is recognition that it's more difficult to catch people who engage in these tactics, even if they're doing it for reasons, for innocent reasons, so to speak. It still makes it harder, means the government isn't going to have as clear a sense of how much they actually lost. So does it really matter what his motives were for moving money to Lebanon? If that makes it more complicated, more difficult for the government to nab him, why isn't that enough for the enhancement?
Judge, because if you look at, and especially in sentencing guidance for tax fraud, he could technically get probation. It all depends on the numbers of millions or what have you. He's already been punished substantially for those amounts, like Your Honor realized, of $60 million.
Maybe the amounts are greater, but because he used these, the government can't really find out how much is in Lebanese bank.
The fact of the judge, I know the court has the wisdom always to look at each individual case differently. She's talking about offshore accounts, sister counsel is. Again, he lived there. That money was going to him. It's not like he was living here, sent this money offshore account through a dummy name or what have you, and then funneled the money through some. Judge, it was basically he lived there. He lived literally one in the last 2 years before the rest. He wasn't even here. That's why they had to go out to Germany again. He was living there. And sister counsel and the government cannot tell me any other way that they could possibly get the money over to the defendant, Judge. He needed to get to the money. Had he lived here, I would agree with sister counsel. But he didn't live here, Judge, for that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ayad and Ms. Stryker. Next case.